Welcome to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. Today on the program, we'll learn about a new effort to understand the immigrant experience in Siouxland and preview Riversance, which is coming up this weekend in Riverside Park. And also, we'll look ahead to this Friday when The Exchange goes to the Sioux City International Film Festival for a live program. But first, an update on a ruling that amends Iowa's voter ID law. A Polk County judge has ruled the state of Iowa can require voters to show an ID at the polls, but struck down other parts of the 2017 voting law as unconstitutional. Judge Joseph Seidlin this week struck down a provision that prevents the state from sending special voter ID cards to many Iowans. He says any voter who requests a voting card should get one. He also requested part of the law allowing county auditors to reject an absentee ballot request if a voter's signature doesn't match other county records, but Seidlin upheld a requirement for voter verification numbers on absentee ballot requests and noted that county auditors have to fill that in if voters leave that information out. Well, on Tuesday, October 8th, voters will go to the polls in Sioux City for a primary election to choose a candidate for the Sioux City Council, and they will be using the new rules of that voter ID law. Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer sat down with the local elected official in charge of the election. Pat Gill is the Woodbury County Auditor and Commissioner of Elections. He talked about the upcoming primary election and that decision by an Iowa judge surrounding the 2017 voting reform law.
What do people need to know about the primary election that's coming up?
Well, it depends on if they've got an absentee ballot out. They want to make sure that if they're going to do it by mail, that they get it in the mail to be postmarked the day before the election so that it can be counted. If they're going to come on election day, they're going to be required to show an ID, some sort of acceptable form of ID. Most of the time, it's just a person's driver's license or a non-operator ID if they have that. But any form of a government ID will work.
And then they go to their precinct that day. If they have questions about that.
Yes, they can look on our website. We do have the precinct locations up there. But if they're not sure what precinct they're in, they should give our office a call at 712-279-6465. But they are required to vote in their designated polling place for this election. We will not be using vote centers. So they have to go to their designated polling place in order to cast their election in the city primary.
And there are 25 locations?
Yes, I believe that is true.
And they also can go to the courthouse and cast their ballot up until election day.
Right. Until the day before election, they can vote early in person. Absentee is what we call it. They can come to the courthouse anytime between 8 and 4:30 and cast a ballot early. But that's just until the day before the election. There will be no voting in the courthouse on election day.
What does it take to do something like this behind the scenes? I mean, you have 25 different locations. You have, I mean, this one might be a little simple because it's just one race. But.
Right. But our precinct election officials, we have to make sure that they're properly trained. And this is the first election we'll be using the new equipment. Voters won't see much of a difference. The ballot is laid out a little differently, but as far as making their choices, they're still going to fill out the oval next to the name of the person that they're seeking. One thing that we are concerned with is people who are voting absentee to make sure that they only vote for one person. It's just in that council race, there's only one office to be filled, and that's the number that you can place your vote for.
Now, we have five different candidates.
Yes.
And I think what's unusual about this race, it's the background of these candidates. We have two women and three other people who are minorities, and I don't know if that's something that you've ever seen before.
We really don't pay attention to who the candidates are. We don't even see the candidates because they file over at the city clerk's office. And so we don't even know who they are. As long as we get the name and the proper paperwork, we really don't know much about the candidates other than what we read in the newspapers.
But I think this hasn't really happened before, has it?
Not as far as I can remember, no.
So I think that might be something that's unprecedented before.
Yes, it is.
And what does it cost to do a primary election like this?
Oh, anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000 is what we end up billing the city council for in a city primary race. And that's mostly what that is, ballot cost and the number of precinct election officials.
Now, when we move to November, this is the first time that you've actually done an election in a special way where you're putting the city and the school board elections together.
That's correct. The legislature deemed that they were hoping that they will get more participation, make it a little more efficient for Iowa counties to run these elections at the same time. But it is a bit more complicated. We just want voters to understand that there is no longer a separate election for the city and the school board elections, that they're combined now. But really, I think the same. It's the same group of people who do vote in those two elections. We hope that it will increase voter turnout, but it really usually doesn't have much of an impact. We have anywhere from 10% to 15% of eligible voters who participate in this election.
And how many registered voters do you have?
57,000 countywide, about 45,000, I think, in the city of Sioux City.
Did it save money then putting them together on the ballot in November?
It will eventually, putting it together and the mailings that we're doing now in order to notify people to make sure that they understand what polling place they can go to. When we were able to use vote centers in these two elections before, it made it pretty efficient because we did cut down on the number of polling places, but voters could go to any one of those, and now they have to go to their designated polling place, and consequently, for both election or for this election, we have 10 more polling places open as a result of the kind of the complication that arose from combining the elections.
Why were the voting centers done away with?
Because it made it difficult for people to understand what where their polling place was. Typically, in a general election, people all go to their designated polling place. But in a school election, they went to actually. Some voters went to different polling places because they'd had to vote in their school district where that ballot was. Now we have to provide that ballot in a designated polling place. So we have a lot more ballot styles that we have to deal with. And we just want to make sure that people go to the right polling place in order to cast their ballot. Voters aren't happy when they show up at a polling place and we direct them to a different polling place.
Was it a state law or something you decided locally?
No, it was a state law.
It was a state law. So yeah. This is something that you were told that you had to do.
Yes. We lobbied in order to do a countywide vote center, and the Secretary of State's office is open to that idea, but they didn't want to do it this quickly.
On election day, when are polls open and when do they close?
Polls open at 7 in the morning, and they're open until 8 p.m.
Now, I also want to talk about another issue that just broke this week. It was a lawsuit that an Iowa judge has just struck down portions of a 2017 voting reform law, declaring much of that law unconstitutional. What kind of impact or what kind of insight do you want to give us about this whole situation?
One of the things for sure is that on next Tuesday, the city primary is, folks, it's really not going to be a big change for those folks, is that they are still going to have to produce that some sort of government ID, acceptable form of ID, driver's license, non-operator ID, passport, veteran cards, those sort of things that they're required to show. And if that ID doesn't have the current residence, they have to produce a secondary form of ID that tells us where their actual voting residence is, where they're registered to vote.
And do you get to vote? Do you usually vote or do you just kind of stay out of it?
And unfortunately, in the city primary, I'm now a resident of Sergeant Bluff, so I don't get to vote in the city primary election, but I will be able to vote in the Sergeant Bluff city election and the Sergeant Bluff school election a month from now.
Thanks for talking to us. Anything else you want to say?
No, I think we've covered it.
That's Woodbury County Auditor and Commissioner of Elections, Pat Gill. The website for more information about the election is woodburycountyiowa.gov/elections. The five candidates running for office are incumbent Rhonda Capron and challengers Julie Shaner, Michael Baella, Michael O'Connor, and Rosario Perez Jr., or Rev. Polls will be open on primary election day, October 8th, from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. The Omaha race riot occurred in Omaha September 28th and 29th in 1919, 100 years ago. That race riot resulted in the brutal lynching of Will Brown, a black worker, the death of two white rioters, the attempted hanging of the mayor, Edward Parsons Smith, and the injuries of many Omaha Police Department officers, as well as white and black civilians, and a public rampage by thousands of white rioters. They set fire to the Douglas County Courthouse in downtown Omaha. Last Saturday morning, a ceremony at the courthouse paid tribute to the memory of Will Brown.
Let us today remember Will Brown. Let us today come together as a community and celebrate how far we have come, while also recognizing how far we have to go.
That was Captain Wayne D. Hudson of the Douglas County Sheriff's Office. Thanks for that audio from Tom Becca from Fox 42 in Omaha, Nebraska. Well, that riot followed more than 20 race riots that occurred in major industrial cities in the U.S. during the so-called Red Summer of 1919. Omaha's Ted Wheeler worked as a reporter for the Courthouse News Service, and that job brought him to the courthouse several times a week. Repeatedly, he came to the scene of one of Omaha's most shameful acts. Wheeler once again became fascinated with the story of the 1919 riots, and that fascination led to his novel, Kings of Broken Things. The book came out a couple of years ago. I talked with him about the lynching of Will Brown and his take on the events of the Red Summer 100 years ago.
So I think there is a lot of political intrigue behind it, which is the book deals with a lot of that too. But Tom Dennison, who was the political boss of Omaha at the time for 30 some years, really. But he had his mayor, who was Cowboy Jim Dahlman was his name, but he was elected 8 times to office. And at this point in 1918, he had been elected 7 times in a row, but they lost this time to a reform slate. Ed Smith was elected mayor. So over the next year, the Dennison machine, was on this campaign to more or less discredit Ed Smith by committing all of these crimes, to just kind of show that Ed Smith didn't have control of the city in any way. And over that summer, I think there were like around 30 rapes of white women, mostly done by men who worked for the machine, who were in blackface. And then the newspaper, the Omaha Bee, was more aligned with the Dennison machine. They would sensationalize this as the era of yellow journalism. So, you know, just kind of built this up more or less to discredit the new regime. But by September of 1919, when the riot occurred, you know, all these things had been building up so much. It was a year after World War I ended, where a lot of soldiers had come back. There were major labor struggles that year as well, along with racial struggles, where a lot of African Americans were coming up from the South to fill those jobs when people had left for the war effort. So I think all these things just kind of combined that month into building this major event that happened at the courthouse.
And basically, there was a big mob, and there was a man that had been accused of raping a white woman, a black man accused of raping a white woman. They went to the courthouse, demanded that they bring him out.
Correct, yeah. So Will Brown was his name. He had almost been lynched previously the Friday of this weekend, where the police had arrested him. He'd been identified as, you know, the accused in this rape and assault. And they had tried to lynch him at the house of the alleged victim. And the police had to, like, run in. It was this big scene where they charged him with a car and pulled him out, like, threw him in the back of a truck and sped him off down to the courthouse for his own safety. But 2 days later, a riot broke out on a Sunday afternoon, mostly led by a bunch of boys from South Omaha and around the area who had come up demanding that the police hand over Will Brown. But there was also the Exarban Carnival was going on that week in Omaha, so there were tens of thousands of visitors in the city. And more or less, you know, that carnival atmosphere broke out around the lynching and the riot, where you had 10,000 to 16,000 people around the courthouse in downtown Omaha, nearly burned the courthouse down. Ed Smith, the new mayor, was actually hung. He was hung up by a traffic signal and had to be cut down and whisked away, and he was nearly killed. So it was just kind of a giant crazy event to happen in what is now mostly a pretty sleepy downtown.
And Tom Dennison, who I think I told you was my mother's great uncle, and I've heard all these wonderful stories. He was a great man. He did wonderful things. He ran Omaha. And mm-hmm. so hearing the other side of it, and I've heard whispers about him before, hearing the other side of it is kind of enlightening. I think it's kind of a thing a family doesn't like to talk about.
Yeah, I'd imagine. And I mean, in researching it too, I think Tom Dennison did do a lot of good things for this city, just in that era of bossism, as it's known. You know, he ran the public utilities, like basically, like if you needed a job, you would go to him and he'd help you out. And I think when he died, I'd read a story, like he didn't have any money left, or they went to like his bank accounts to and expected to find all these jewels and all this cash. And he had like $24 in a watch because he'd given away so much more of it. Like if anyone ever needed help, like it was known that he would help you out no matter the situation. That duality of it is just so interesting too, that I think he did a lot of good things, but it's still organized crime at the base of that, and a lot of bad things happened around it.
In the aftermath of all this, where Jake, he goes west with, is it Evie?
I say Evie, yeah.
Evie. Jake goes west with Evie. They keep going. They have a whole nother life. It never really leaves their mind, their whole lives.
Right. And I think just doing that in the story, besides just kind of feeling realistic and offering, you know, a sense of closure to the book, but I wanted to think a lot because Will Brown isn't a super major character in the novel itself. Like he doesn't get that much page time. But I wanted to have this sense of these characters get to move on with their lives and other characters don't. That Will Brown was murdered at the courthouse. And even though like Jake specifically, who can double crosses people he shouldn't in the novel and does all these bad things, is involved in organized crime. But more or less, like when he wants to get out, he can just leave town and do that and start a new life. So in setting up that comparison was a big thing.
There's that picture, that famous picture of this poor man after he was hung, after they had hanged him, being burnt, and all these mm-hmm. men of the town who perpetrated this behind him. Some of them are smiling.
Yeah.
It's such a haunting image. A lot of people don't know that's not from like the Deep South. That's from Omaha.
Right. A lot of the time there were 30 some riots that were somewhat similar to this around the country in the time, most of which were in industrialized northern cities. So it is, I think that is, you know, just something, at least growing up in Nebraska, like we did have a lot of education about civil rights and these things, but it was generally couched in the terms that it was a regional southern problem. And again, you know, I think that's why it's so interesting and so vital to talk about it, because it totally wasn't. I mean, it was much worse in the Deep South and much more common, but these things did happen up in the North as well.
Now, you worked on this book for several years.
Yeah, for about 7 years it took me to write.
It really seems to have hit home with a lot of people.
Yeah, the response has been really great so far. I mean, just doing the events, they've been well attended, and usually we've been just chatting with people for a half an hour after every event, just because people are really into it and want to learn more about it.
That was Ted Wheeler, the author of Kings of Broken Things, a novel that tells the story of the Red Summer of 1919, which culminated in race riots across the country. The Omaha race riot was on September 28th, and it ended with the tragic murder of Willie Brown. You're listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. A new art exhibit in Sioux City asks a simple question on the surface. What does it mean to be an American? As Siouxland Public Media Sheila Brummer reports, this rare art initiative showcases a diverse dialogue for people living in Siouxland.
Looking for America Siouxland features works by a dozen artists at the Betty Strong Encounter Center. The pieces include photos, mixed media, graphic design.
It's a pig.
Whole Hog by Rich Yates shows parts of the animal with words sometimes used to describe others, like them, different, deviant,
other people,
strange.
Right? Even though we're still part of this whole community, and again, which the pig represents for us.
One of a handful of paintings includes a John Deere tractor, others' abstract thoughts
with a simple theme. And what does America mean to you?
Good question.
At a special gathering to launch the exhibit, Christine McAvoy snaps pictures of some of the women whose faces cover nearly a full wall.
Actually, I am the lone photographer in this exhibit. The women that I photographed are women from a mentoring group called Emerging Women's Voices. We meet every single Tuesday, and we become a very close-knit group of individuals. I wanted to photograph them. And when I first broached the subject, everybody was like, oh, no, 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 I don't want to have my picture taken. And so I slowly wore them down and started photographing the women. And once they saw the results, then they were willing to be photographed. And so it's been a great journey. I wanted to photograph them how I see them. I see them as strong women. I see them as interesting women. I see them as great contributions to our community.
Can you tell me a little bit about some of the women in the photographs?
Well, the women come from all over. We have women on the wall that represent East Africa. We have women that are from Pakistan, from Central America, Jamaica. There's just a plethora of women that are represented.
One of the images shows a young teen smiling in a sea of multicolored basketballs.
My name is Zakia. I am 15 years old and I go to North High School. I feel like I like it because it kind of stands me out because you never seen like a Muslim girl playing basketball.
Zakia is Ethiopian, born in Kenya before moving to the U.S.
I came here when I was about 6 months. My mom was very new to this country and everything. It was hard for her to, like, you know, attract to it and everything.
Do you think this is a community that embraces diversity?
Yes, I've been living in the city for 6 years now. Now we have different kind of countries that are coming here. I feel like the city changed and became more open.
There's room for all of these
different Dan Wallace is the director of projects for New American Economy, a bipartisan research and advocacy organization based in New York City.
Because what we're doing is we're asking people, what does it mean to be American in your community? And so we wanted to have answers to that question come from lots of different kinds of places.
Sioux City is one of only six communities across the country chosen for this art initiative, with a goal of bringing people of different backgrounds and beliefs together.
So when we were thinking about where to go, what we really wanted most was to have geographic diversity, demographic diversity, political diversity. And so on our way here, we've already stopped in Detroit, Michigan, Salt Lake City, Utah, Anchorage, Alaska. This is our fourth stop. We're going on to El Paso, Texas, and then to Northwest Arkansas. We've worked really closely with an organization called One Siouxland for the last couple of years.
When they called and said, hey, do you want to do it? I was like, absolutely.
Erica De Leon, I'm the director of One Siouxland. So One Siouxland about 2 years ago was awarded a Gateways for Growth grant, which is really looking at the economic impact of immigrants and refugees on our community, looking at things like tax dollars, business started, jobs filled, things like that. And as part of that, then building a strategic plan to be a more welcoming and inclusive community. We've gotten so far away from civil discourse in this country in a lot of instances that it's really become important for us to get back to looking at each other as human, not as a Republican or a Democrat or whatever we label people.
Do you think Sioux City does enough to embrace diversity and people from different backgrounds?
Well, and I think in general we're really good at that because we're Midwest and we have big hearts and we like to welcome people. But I think one of the big things is just understanding and getting to know people rather than listening to what we hear on the national news. If we would all, you know, maybe turn the national news off and really just go outside and talk to each other and get to know each other a little bit better, I think that that's probably one of the best ways we can connect with anybody, regardless of what country they're from.
A sentiment echoed by those participating, including photographer Christine McAvoy.
What does America mean to you?
The biggest thing, I think, is acceptance.
In Sioux City, for Siouxland Public Media News, I'm Sheila Brummer.
When people see these images, I hope that they accept these women. I hope that people accept me for all of my strengths and my weaknesses and my idiosyncrasies, because there are so many places in the world where if you are one way or another, if you are a woman or your sexual orientation or the color of your skin or your religion, you are not safe in that nation. And this is a nation that everybody should be able to be who they are, their true self.
You can check out Looking for America, Siouxland at the Betty Strong Encounter Center at the Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center until the end of the year. For a look at the exhibit, we have a video posted on our Siouxland Public Media Facebook page. The Sioux City Arts Center recently held a grand opening to show the public the newly renovated facility and feature the new Gilchrist Learning Center. Part of the renovation includes an updated hands-on gallery. The Junior League of Sioux City was instrumental in opening the gallery back in 1997. Junior League Committee Chair for the hands-on gallery, Rhonda Henry, showed Siouxland Public Media Sheila Brummer, who's also a Junior League member, around the children's attraction that's already attracting a young crowd.
What we have here first is our light bright table, and it has two different functions. First of all, you can either put yourself on a timer and play the games like the girls doing, and so you can have them pick a picture and reiterate what the picture looks like, or you can just do anything with the multicolors that we have here and just do your own imagination, let it run wild, and it's just like the old-fashioned light bright game, and it's so cool.
Next thing, it says I am a feeling, and it has a bunch of different yarns. Can you explain what this next little station entails?
So this is kind of more the, as far as art goes, it's not just all about colors and texture. This is more the feeling part of it. And so we thought, we liked the fact the yarn wall, but we've got emojis on here too. So we're with the times, and we have where the kids can come and kind of, as they're going through, they can either just make a decoration with the yarn, or they can actually say, hey, I'm hangry today. Let's see. I'm terrific. I'm shy. I'm sad. And there's just all sorts of things they can pick and kind of just go through the whole emotions and feelings. And it's just something different and fun.
So. And what kind of emotion do you have going through you right now?
Oh, I'm excited. Before we move on, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Kandinsky corner here too. What we've got is a lot of felt and shapes. And so you can put all the colors, shapes, felts, and we've got a couple different areas, and it's just meant for anybody to help decorate it. It's just a lot of fun to work with all the different shapes and colors. So those are the Kandinsky circles.
Over here, the color wheel?
Yes. So the color wheel, the sun is not brightly shining at the moment, but it is really cool when the sun's brightly shining. But it's meant, we've got our primary colors going together, and it's just a way to kind of show how you mix them. So when you mix your red and your blues and your yellows and greens, and how you can make the different colors. As you can see, we've put it in this window area. So when people are looking at it from the outside too, they're going to be like, what is that? Like, that looks really exciting to go in and try.
Let's talk about the next thing in line.
This is the magnet wall, and this is something we kept from the old gallery. So we just redid the background of it. It is just, again, a way for kids to just use their imagination. It's just always been a very popular item.
And it's a memory of Linda Harchie?
It is, yes. She is one of our sustaining members that passed away. And it was donated back when we did our renovation back in 2007 and 2009. And so we kept it in her name for the new one as well.
So what do we have over here? What is this? It says roll a picture.
Kind of go down with the different colors. And again, you can change them out, all different pictures and names.
And I like how you're on the ground actually doing this like you were a three-year-old.
It is meant for the smaller kids to come play with it.
Now, this next thing looks pretty familiar. This was in the other gallery that they had for the kids.
Correct, yes. This kinetic ball drop was in the other gallery. It actually wasn't working at the time, needed to be refurbished a little bit, so we took care of that. And it's just a fun little thing to watch how the balls go up and, you know, how when one thing happens like that, it just flips. And kids can spend hours watching this kind of thing, so just a lot of fun.
Okay, this is a pretty bright idea right here.
This is very cool. This is the Everbright wall, and it has these little circles that all you do is continue to change the colors as you turn the circle. And it has endless hours of, you know, creativity and opportunity for kids to, you know, put whatever they want on here with the multiple colors. And we as a committee, when we saw this, we all voted this. We thought this was one of the best things ever. So we're like, we want that.
And I think even adults like to play with it.
Oh, yes.
And can you relay real quick what colors are? I think pretty much every color is on here.
There are a spectrum of colors, yes. All the way from, and again, as you notice, it's shades, you know. So you have to be cautious because it's not just where it goes blue, from blue to red to yellow to green. It goes from everything in between. And you have your purples, you have your orange, you have your light blues, you have your turquoise. You have got every spectrum here. So it is Very cool.
And this optical illusion wall is pretty nice as well.
Yeah, this was actually, we found it on Pinterest, believe it or not. So some of our research for some of the different exhibits and things like that came from Pinterest. And we're like, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we could do something like that? And we found this specific wallpaper, and we thought it'd be perfect on this wall. Just kind of a fun picture setting for everybody to go and, you know, get that illusion in the wall. You see some of that nowadays, and just adds, you know, just a different twist of dimension to the gallery.
And next we're going to talk about these blue blocks. These things are massive.
These are, and that's what they're called. They are called the blue blocks, and they are just, again, meant to let your imagination run wild. They are all different kind of shapes and sizes, as you can tell. It's not like your normal blocks where they're all square and they have circles in them. So they have a number of different noodles that fit and different things you can build. And we just thought this would be a great thing that the kids would want to play in. As you can see, we have lots of kids.
Whoa, I think, yeah, we're getting pushed around, aren't we?
Yes. As you can see, it's a popular item. So, oh, they're already building a little track here and everything, too. So just so much you can do with them. I mean, again, one of the main focuses was, you know, just to allow creativity.
This next little table that we have here, this looks kind of familiar. This is something that we used to do when we were kids, I think, Rhonda.
It is. You know, some of this, we kind of went back to the drawing boards, and it's called the cognitive art table, but it's really like a spirograph, you know? So it has all different wheels and the shapes. So that way there are so many different patterns and everything that you can create amongst them. And again, just, you know, something different and fun for the kids to do.
We have two more things to talk about.
Yes, our noodle tunnel. This was actually an original that we came up with the idea as Junior League members. We were originally looking at something kind of similar, but the noodles were going to be very expensive. So we actually found these gray noodles, and we decided to go red and yellow, and the fabricator worked with us, and what a lot of fun. Who doesn't like to climb through tunnels? And there's just so much creativity and things they can do with the foam noodles on there, and we think it's going to be a great little addition to this, to the gallery.
And finally, this is something I think the kids enjoyed at the other gallery.
Yes. Last and not least, we have our Lego tower, or the power tower, and this was another popular attraction, so we had to keep it, you know, and everybody loves Legos, and again, just the creativity you can get with it, and the fun, and it's just, it's a nice, it's big, you know, so you can get multiple kids playing at one time, and that was the other thing, you know, it's like, you know, to try and come up with things where lots of kids could play, because again, it's designed to be available and open for all kids, and so just exciting that we could keep that, and it'll be here for years to come.
And it's so important, because I think this really enhances the future for children and helps them grow mentally and artistically.
I completely agree. So much of what the kids get nowadays are online or social media or through their tablets and computers. And I don't know if you knew this, but there were computers in the other gallery, and we decided to do away with them. You know, it's like we wanted to kind of bring back some of the old school hands-on things so that kids get back the feel for creativity and arts through, you know, and again, that's what it's meant to be, a hands-on children's gallery. And so, you know, that's what our focus was when we came up with the different exhibits.
The hands-on gallery is free and open to the public during business hours at the Arts Center at 225 Nebraska Street in Sioux City. You can see what the exhibits look like if you check out a short video on our Siouxland Public Media Facebook page. This weekend, Sioux City's Riverside Park will go back in time to the Renaissance, a period in European history spanning between the 14th and 17th centuries. Phil Clay sat down with Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer to talk about the Kingdom of Riverside.
So Phil, tell us what's going to be exciting about this year's Kingdom of Riverside.
Well, you know, we could start with the full armor jousting three times a day in our Sunnyfield jousting field. Or we could talk about the birds of prey, where these birds, they fly all over and the person explains their backgrounds. And we could talk about the belly dancing continuously. Or we could talk about the five stages with comedy and music. Or we could talk about the hundreds of people walking around just to entertain you on the grounds. Or we could talk about the food vendors and the artisans and the encampments. And so, you know, the moment you walk in, you're in fantasy land. But it's real. We're all there.
Transformed into a different era for sure.
Exactly. That's our purpose, to have you step back to the Renaissance period, you know. And you'll hear often where suddenly somebody will just yell, hip, hip. And back then, the response is huzzah. So when you're out there and you hear hip, hip, say huzzah.
Huzzah.
It sounds good to raise your voice and scream something in a happy fashion. So we create an environment where we have all these people that have found their characters, and they dress the part and they play the part, because that's a part of their persona, and especially it's the kingdom is where they express it. And we invite everyone to come out and enjoy that. We're there to entertain you as a visitor to our kingdom of Renaissance. And this is the 16th year we're doing it. It's been more of a success than I had ever hoped when it started. But it's just a really cool event for family, children of all ages. It's just a really cool, fun family event, unique to any other.
And you have a special character. You said there's like...
Oh, yes. I'm the fallen Friar Phil of the Kingdom of Renaissance, of the Claes clan of Belgium. And I seem to seemingly sigh and seem remorseful, because being the fallen friar, that indicates that the wenches and the mead. Phew. So I'm a friar. I'm a fallen friar.
And you're just one of many, many characters. How many people?
250 at least.
Wow.
Will be out there. And like I say, they're simply there to entertain you from the moment you get there. All of you that come out there and enjoy the kingdom, we're there to make sure that you have an experience where you say, wow, that was really cool.
That's great. And you said that there's some great entertainment, too, that people can check out.
Oh,
you have
belly
dancing. Belly
dancing, singers, dancers, jugglers, stilt walkers. There's fire eaters. There's drummers. There's a lot of dancing, a lot of singing, a lot of pirates, a lot of Vikings, a lot of wenches, a lot of royalty.
And some food, too.
And some great food. Turkey legs. You ever have... You hold a turkey leg and bite into that, and at that point, you've stepped back into time, because it's pretty awesome to watch people attempt to eat their turkey leg, having never held a big turkey leg in their hand before. And, you know, there's no slot knives and forks that you cut the thing up here. You know, you just eat it. Eat it like you're supposed to. Just.
And back in the day, maybe only the kings would get turkey legs.
Yes. Yeah, the peasants would get what was left on the bone. You know, that was thrown away, you know. And we have that. We have peasantry up to royalty. I mean, we have the full spectrum. And the characters, some of them are just so darn interesting. And it's just fun to watch people respond to them. Like I say, and the main thing to me, the full armor joust. I mean, you got these humongous horses, these people trained to actually go there, and they have the spears, and they do a joust right in front of you. That in itself is something you've seen on TV, you've seen on movies, but now you're hearing the thunder of the horses galloping. You're hearing the crowd, which you're a part of, responding to the fact that there's a good guy and a bad guy here, you know, and, you know, we want this one to win or this one to win. And they joust. They actually do pound each other and joust.
Wow. And it's a chance just to get away. Use your imagination and people watch.
Exactly. Exactly. Children under six, again, are free. You know, we've kept the price down on purpose. And adults are only $10. Anywhere else, a festival like this, you'll be paying $20 to $30 to come. And we, being Rivercade nonprofit, we've been able to keep that down. Ages 6 to 12 are only $5. And the scavenger hunt, I'm going to mention, when you get there, your child will be involved, be invited to win golden eggs and things like that if they do the scavenger hunt. And there's pictures of many of the characters, and they go around, find these characters and hear a little story from them. Then they sign it, and then they turn it in for cookies and other things at the end of their visit. So, I mean, there's all kinds of events going on all day long.
That was Phil Clayes, the founder of the Kingdom of Riversance, taking place at Riverside Park in Sioux City this weekend. Doors open Saturday and Sunday at 10 a.m. Find out more about Riversance this Friday during Food for Thought at noon. You can also find out more on the Facebook page for the Kingdom of Riversance.
The Morningside College Piano Recital Series continues on Saturday, October 5th. Logan Skelton and Scott Piper will be joining this series. Logan has been here before.
Logan has been here several times before. He's a favorite guest.
And this is my guest, Professor Jim March. And Logan is joined by a tenor, Scott Piper. They'll be performing art songs that were set to a lot of poetry set to music by Logan himself.
Correct.
And two poets that most people will have heard of. And then songs by his father, Zan Skelton, as well.
Correct.
His father was an author, a writer.
Right.
There's not a lot out there on these particular works.
Well, that's probably because they're all very new. The oldest set of pieces is the set by E.E. Cummins that will end the first half. And that was written in 2016. And the newest works are the ones that he will open the program with. He titled them the Burns Songs, A Plowman's Life. And they were written in the summer of 2018.
I mean, I love poetry. These are very different poets, Burns and Cummins, from different times, from very different places. You know, Burns is thought of as the great Scottish poet. Cummins is one of America's great poets that, you know, I think when it's all said and done, Cummins will be considered in the top. This is an expression of what American poetry came to be, a height, and so musical. His poetry is language become music, and to really understand his poetry, you have to listen to it. It's great on the page, but when it leaves the page, it becomes something else, and a meaning comes through in the music of it that is not common in poetry. It's something new altogether.
Anyone lived in a pretty how town with up so floating many bells down? Spring, summer, autumn, winter, he sang his didn't, he danced his did.
It's interesting that you say E.E. Cummins will be one of categorized as one of the greats, you know, long term. And I think that's true about Skelton, too. He's written over 200 songs already. He's a very mature composer. I mean, he's in the height of his compositional style and technique right now. His music is getting a lot of performances worldwide. A lot of things have been recorded and performed at various festivals around the world. And he's sort of got a triple career. He's a phenomenal teacher, first off, but he's also an incredible pianist and a great composer. So it's really kind of interesting. And not always does it line up that a good composer is also a great performer of their own works. But in this case, that happens to work out.
Yes. Well, it makes sense when I read what he's written about some of the poetry that he's composed music for and set to music. For example, when he talks about E.E. Cummins, he says, "I have always found myself inexplicably drawn to Cummins' poetry. Indeed, I would say that I daily live with these and other Cummins poems. They are some of my closest companions." I mean, this music, it makes it, he really, it's important to him in not just an intellectual way, or, you know, it seems like he almost has a need to work with it and to place it in the world of music.
That's really true. I mean, we've had conversations about that. And in the case of the Burns songs that he starts the program with, he was very much drawn to these poems, and he always thought that they seemed so musical. And he came to discover that they were old Scottish folk tunes from the second half of the 1700s. There's actually only two of the songs in that set that were original tunes, and otherwise he basically arranged the original tunes and reworked the poems. Very, very interesting set. You know, wide range of emotions. Some of them are hilarious. Others are very touching and heartfelt and gut-wrenching in some cases.
Yeah, Burns could get into the body world of Scottish life.
Yeah.
But many people will know, of course, he's one of the poets that people actually still sing with Auld Lang Syne. We sing it once a year.
Right.
So, he described it as a song he'd heard from I don't know if it was a drunken man singing in the street that was originally transcribed from that Burns found. So it is music of a people and a time, but it'll be nice to hear it set to music by Logan Skelton.
One thing about Logan, he was born in Mississippi, and he has this sort of slow Southern delivery in his storytelling, and you're just drawn into the stories that he tells just in conversations. And his compositions are very much that same way. I mean, you're drawn in and you just want to hear what comes next. I mean, he takes you on very interesting journeys and tells you very engaging tales. There's something so genuine about everything he does. It's really remarkable. And Scott Piper just becomes the characters that he sings about. Once again, another artist who really draws the listener in.
Mm-hmm. And he's a colleague of Logan's at
They're
University
both on the faculty at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. Logan is the chair of graduate piano, and Scott is the chair of voice.
So they've gotten to work, I'm sure, quite a bit
They're
together on these.
They're very good friends. Which adds an extra dimension to their collaborations, too. They kind of can think instinctively about and know what the other one wants.
Mm-hmm.
They really are great collaborators.
Yeah. Well, this will be a great treat. Unusual.
I'm really excited about this program. It's very different from some of the other recitals we've had on the series, but I think it's fun to showcase the piano in this role and to have a very prominent, very active composer presenting his own works.
So again, the recital is Saturday, October 5th, and this is going to be in Epley Auditorium.
In Epley, free and open to the public.
7:30 p.m. Thank you so much for joining us again, Jim.
Thanks.
Listening to The Exchange. I'm Mary Hartnett. The Sioux City International Film Festival begins tomorrow. The festival runs from Thursday through Sunday. Rick Mullen is the president of the board for the Siouxland Institute of Film, the nonprofit corporation that organizes the festival each year. I talked with Mullen, who said this year's theme is Women in Film. One of the roundtable discussions will focus on the history of women in film, and it will be moderated by historian and actress Rhiannon Kohler, who teaches at the Art Institute of Chicago.
She's good technically, historically she understands, and she's a good storyteller, which is even critical when you're trying to have something like this. So she's part of the discussions we're having at the convention center on Saturday. And those are free, open to the public. You can just show up and enjoy that. It's a really interesting opportunity. So if anybody who's interested in film, filmmaking, television, movie production, there's going to be some great people there who will be telling some great stories, and you can interact with them.
Mullen says in this 15th year of the Sioux City International Film Festival, there was an embarrassment of riches when it came to the quality of the films and the filmmakers who applied to be part of the fest.
We had 175 films submitted from all over the world, and then we had 30 people around the community who acted as our judges, and we would assign them blocks of 17 or 18 films, and they got to judge them on a 1 to 10 scale. And then we compiled all the judges, and most of the films were really, really good. Virtually everything was rated 5 or higher, and some years we had a lot of 1s and 2s, but every film, but most of the films were in the 7 to 8 or 9 range or better. But even though we have 2 screens at the Promenade for 3 days, we had to have a cutoff at about 8.9 or better, which means a tremendous number of the films we would have shown any other year we're not going to show. We just don't have the time to show them all. It's crazy. So there's a lot of great films. It's quite a unique opportunity, and I think it's going to be an awful lot of fun for people who just like movies.
And you can join us for a live edition of The Exchange Friday morning at 10. We'll be talking with filmmakers about their films and about other events that are going to be going on at the Sioux City International Film Festival. Well, that's it for this edition of The Exchange. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mary Hartnett. We'll talk to you on Friday.